We're talking LAPD with a big anniversary coming up, 150 years, and the Jack Webb Award celebrating a 25th anniversary. Welcome, my guest, to Olympic and Bundy. So this is the podcast out of West L.A. at the station here, Fox 11 News, at Olympic and Bundy. And my guest is Bob Alaniz, a sergeant with the LAPD. And we're going to talk about the history of the LAPD, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. And you've been with the department how many years?
Going on 38 years.
I would think that you have a bit of history.
Yes.
How did you get involved with policing?
So, you know, everybody has their own idea of what policing is about. And for the most part, it's, you know, you see the motto to protect and serve. It's the serving part that is more of the exciting part of policing and the bulk of what you do. The protecting comes in here and there, but you have to have a community, you know, interest in the community and helping them out. So
where are you from?
Originally from Texas, McAllen, Texas, but my parents moved here in the early 60s, so I've, you know, been in Angeleno, basically.
So grew up where?
Mid-Wilshire, mostly.
Okay.
So I would have gone to L.A. High, but the earthquake destroyed the building, so they sent me up to Fairfax and graduated from Fairfax.
Okay. How'd you get into the LAPD?
You know, it's something that I've had an interest in. Originally, I was going to be going to architecture, and
it's a big change.
Yeah. Well, my best friend at the time, he was in accounting, and he said, "You know, we have boring lives, so let's go downtown and let's check out LAPD." And so we just did one step at a time, and pretty soon we joined. So.
Okay, where were you stationed first?
Northeast. And so the very first building actually is the museum. So that was still an active police station when I came on.
So you now are on the board of the museum?
Correct.
All right, what's the official name of the museum?
Los Angeles Police Museum.
And how long have you been there with that?
About 2.5 years.
Okay.
On the board. And then prior to that, I did a lot of research and writing. So that is where my interest in the museum came, is doing the actual research out of the city archives. And that was in the 90s.
And you're also on the board of directors for the Los Angeles City Historical Society?
Yes.
That's different.
Correct.
What does that organization do?
So that's out of the LA City Archives, and it promotes the history of the city of Los Angeles. And my association there was the access I was granted to see source material right out of the archives. I mean, they have stuff way back at the beginning of time. And I extracted information from there on the early history of LAPD.
Okay, we should also note, as a sidebar, you also work in theater on the board of directors for the East Los Angeles Classic Theater, Latino-based theater company.
Yes, and that's my best friend, Tony Plana.
Oh, I've met him. Yes.
Yes.
So that's your side interest?
Yes. So the interest there was is the educational component, using theater as a way to interest kids. And we would teach the kids how to write their own story. And then from there, Tony would teach them how to direct and put together a little musical or a play with the material that they write.
And he's an iconic figure, iconic Latino actor.
Yes, very, very active, still active. I think it's over 80 movies. He's filming now in Mexico, and he'll be back. Actually, he's going to be doing a play here in L.A. with Andy Garcia, and it's called Key Largo. They're going to be playing it they have 100 shows booked.
So it's not just police work?
No.
Okay, very good. So we're here to talk about two anniversaries. One thing is the Jack Webb Awards, which, I'm so grateful to be able to MC your event coming up. The Jack Webb Awards, for those who don't know what that is, go ahead.
So the Jack Webb Awards, that's the premier fundraising event that we have for the museum. This is the 25th year anniversary. And from that, we're able to sustain most of the museum activities and administrative costs just on that one single event. So.
And if you've never been to the museum, it's very powerful. We got a chance to go down there with you earlier this year.
Yes.
The old jail that you have there is got to walk in there and sit in and be grateful I've never been in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was built in 1925. It is completely outdated. I mean, we don't even we wouldn't even fathom putting anybody in that facility today. But that was back then.
And then quite a car collection as well.
Yes, we have we have a limited car collection in the back because of space. But we have more that we bring in for special events. So
give me some of the years and types of cars.
Well, the Peterson Museum has a black and white Studebaker 1924 that they fully restored, and they do bring out for special events. And we have cars in the 40s, 50s on display. We have cars from the 70s, 80s, and the North Hollywood Shootout vehicles.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. I was just at Bob's Big Boy on Friday night.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever been in the Valley where they have this classic car night?
Yes.
And it's really neat to see all these cars. Well, uphold an old classic ambulance.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, my gosh, it seems so primitive.
Yes.
The way we transported people back in the day.
Oh my goodness! Yes, the cars that the first car that one of the first cars that I drove was a '79 Matador, or maybe it was a '76 Matador. No power steering. This is a police car. No power steering. You got to roll the windows down
by hand.
Yeah,
crank them down. Yeah.
No air conditioning.
Right.
So it was very primitive, and to think that that's what we had even in the early 80s.
Right, and then you have a couple of great displays on the second floor of the museum. I love the old uniforms.
Yeah, so the uniforms are a good representation of. What we had from the inception. So in 1876 was the first uniform and badge that was designed by Chief Juan Carrillo. He was tasked with coming up with a uniform size badge. So what you see there is what he designed. It's got, believe it or not, an old Bobby-style hat. And so Carrillo came from the Carrillo family, very very prominent Hispanic family back in our history, and they sent him and all the kids back east to for education. So he was educated in Boston, and when he was a teenager, he came back. So those are the thoughts and ideas he had when he designed the first uniform.
In all my years of being a news anchor in Los Angeles, I had no idea the first police chief was Latino.
Yes. Well, we got a lot of firsts. You know, we have the very first African-American officer hired in the entire country, and that's LAPD, Robert Stewart. Now, Robert Stewart, he was actually born a slave, and after the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation, he became a free man. He was born in Kentucky. And he made a journey all the way to California and became a Los Angeles police officer. So he's got a great story. And he was on the department for about 5 years. He got in some trouble. Now, back then, when he got in trouble, they removed you from the department. And then once you sorted things out and when you're vindicated that you came back on. Well, he was never restored his badge and his position. So we're going to have the 150th anniversary celebration this year, and from what I understand, Chief Moore is going to restore his position and his badge back.
Meaning he was not found to be in trouble after all,
of
thing?
Yes. So he was found innocent, but he was never given his status back.
Oh,
so we're going to correct that.
What a moment that will be. Does he have family around?
We're actively looking for Ed. I can't tell you right now if we found him or not, but I think we have something in the works because there's somebody that's going to be there.
What a moment.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what about women on the job?
The very first woman ever in the entire country also was LAPD, Alice Wells, and she came on in 1910. Her uniform is also at the museum, and That one, people look at it and think, wow, it's just kind of a really old, dated uniform. But she designed it, and she actually made the uniform herself.
Paint a picture of that uniform for me.
It's, let's see.
Is it pants?
No, it's a dress.
Right.
It's a long dress, mm-hmm. Long sleeves, and it's a light green in color with a silk trim.
So when she was on the job, was she in a patrol car?
No. She did more of a kind of a detective type work. She didn't work the field.
Okay. When did women start working the field?
So that came about, you know, there was two phases. So we had women on the job that were kind of symbolic a little bit. They wore skirts and... they weren't actually working the field, so they worked more of a detective, similar to what she did. And there was an African-American lady named Franchon Blake. She became a sergeant in the early 70s, I want to say 1973, and that was the glass ceiling. And she was told that's as far as women go. And she said, well, what happens if I want to become a chief? And they said, you can't. This is it. Mm-hmm. So, and she also wanted to work the field. So she filed a class action lawsuit, the Franchon Blake lawsuit, and it was resolved in around 1980 in favor of women, and it allowed women to work the field. So during that time, the current female officers had the opportunity of either staying in that rank, and they wore a badge that said police woman, or become a police officer. And so they had to go through a modified academy and do the shooting qualification and the self-defense and all that. And then they were certified to work in the field.
Well, what a different ballgame it is today, because I think, you know, I pass, you know, driving down the street all the time, you see women officers of
yes.
all shapes and sizes, all heights as well.
Yes. Yeah. So let me tell you a quick story. So I'm assigned to... The Northeast Police Station in 1982, and the Community Relations Sergeant, I remember him distinctly grabbing a bunch of us and proudly taking us down this little hallway and into this little room on the first floor, and he said, here, check this out. And so we see six lockers, and he said, this is the new women's locker room. Now, they told me to get, we're going to get a female officer to work the field, and they told me to get three lockers. Just in case we get a few more, but I'm thinking for the future. I'm thinking ahead, and I got six.
Yeah.
So I got these guys beat. They only want three, but I got six just in case we have a few extra women.
And now, do you have the figure now in 2019? How many women are on the job, give or take?
Yeah, about 3,000 or 4,000.
Wow.
I mean, half the department.
Half the department, because you have what, almost 10,000.
Yes.
You're under 10,000.
Yeah. So I look back at that and think, wow, you know, just our view of women back then on the department. And compared to today, I mean, what a difference.
Well, out of curiosity, how about some numbers here? The number of African Americans now on the job.
So that I don't know for sure, because, you know, that changes a lot, but it reflects our community. So we usually keep it around 40%. And so you kind of double dip with women and men. So the numbers change a little bit. So 30 to 40% easy.
And what about Latino?
It's about the same, you know, about 30%.
Okay.
So, and then you have a small percentage for Pacific Islanders and Asian Americans.
You are a wealth of information.
Yeah.
You're the right man for the job for the museum, for sure. Why do you want to be part of the museum?
Well, you know, the police department has a history. We always see a lot of negative things about it, but there's some great stories out there. There's people out there that contribute that you really don't know about, and I like to hear about those things. And I want to make sure that the community and kids in general see some of the people that come through and inspire them to be good citizens and maybe become great police officers. I mean, I worked with an officer. He was in the Bay of Pigs. He was the youngest person in the Bay of Pigs. He became a prisoner, got out. He went to Cuba, from Cuba to Miami, and then came to L.A. and became a police officer.
Wow.
You know, so that's a story that's there. So there's something more than just somebody wearing a badge, but there's a story behind it. And that's what I want to do, is capture those stories and highlight them. So rather than having just a mannequin with a uniform, I want to have a person that has a story that we can tell. So it's more than just looking at a uniform that's on a wall.
Well, we all know, especially working in the news, that any police department, LAPD being such a large department, has had its fair share of controversies. Do you cover any of that in the museum, or is that you're trying to highlight positive?
Mostly positive. I mean, we have some of those things there, but I think in the proper perspective, we'll address it. You know, we definitely have struggles. Now, for instance, the first female officer, we have her mannequin along with a female with wearing a skirt. And then next to it, we're going to have a female officer of today wearing pants. And so we'll be able to show the contrast and what happened not only in the department but socially. What occurred in a society to make the change from women wearing skirts to pants on the department. And that's a story that kids can relate to. So it's not just a story of LAPD, but it's also our social story. You know, when we talk about minorities, I mean, our story of minorities started even way before anybody else in the country thought of having any minority. You know, and we talk about being a family, and as a family, we have a pedigree. And before us, we had the Spanish flag that ruled here, and before that, well, after that, then we had the Mexican flag. So in that process, we have African-American officers that were part of our police history. Now, you don't know it because they had Spanish last names, but they were African-American. So identifying them and bringing that out is also a goal of mine.
So paint a picture of the museum. Let's continue on a little tour. We saw the uniforms. Give me another display.
Well, when you walk into the uniform, before you get to the uniform floor, you're going to come in the first floor. The building itself, where we're storing it, is as close as possible to the day that it opened up. So the base is all limestone. It's beautiful limestone. The top along the roof, the trim, that's all tin, made out of tin, and it's handmade tin. So the craftsmanship is unbelievable. As you walk through the first floor, you'll see the jail, and then you'll see some of the old offices for the where the captain used to be. And then you go upstairs, and then that was the detective room. And the detective room is what we turned into the main the gallery room.
Well, the jail almost looks like an old movie, and I know you use that for old movies.
Yes. I mean, you can't replicate the inside of that building, so we do get a lot of movies that are filmed there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one, you know, it's just antiquated. I mean, when you look at it, it's an interesting setup, but for today's standard, it's not even close. I mean, I wouldn't even put my cat in there.
Okay. All right, so moving on, more of a tour. So we go upstairs.
Yeah. So you go upstairs. Mm-hmm. In that room, we're making some changes. You've got the uniform room. We have the SLA shootout room with Patty Hearst and the weapon that she used when she was robbing banks with the SLA terrorist group.
SLA, Symbionese Liberation Army.
Correct.
So she was. So Patty Hearst is an heiress, is kidnapped by this group, and then kind of becomes one of them.
Yes.
Robbing banks.
Correct.
All right. So then you have which room now?
So that would be, we have three rooms dedicated to that. And it's not just about that terrorist organization, but it also put our SWAT concept in the forefront. That's when it became a household name. Before that, it's something that we developed. We developed the very first SWAT program. And we visualized that type of a scenario where it would be beyond a regular officer to handle. So when this incident occurred, it put that SWAT unit, our SWAT unit, national news, well, actually world news. And then from then, everything is history.
Okay.
So that's the importance of that.
So the Patty Hearst room is where she, it's like a closet, right? Like the size of a small closet.
Yeah, so we replicated the actual room that she was placed, and it's small.
How long was she held there?
several months before she started. And when she was in there, it was 3 or 4 months of her just being alone, and then they started indoctrinating her little by little. So,
and it's not even the size of my bathroom.
No. Oh, my goodness, no. It's a small closet.
Yeah.
You know, and then eventually she just became a part of the organization, indoctrinated, and she was in Los Angeles. However, she left, I think, the day before when we raided the location and had the big shootout. So we almost rescued her. But
and how did that all end for her?
She ended up, we ended up rescuing her. And then she went through her, you know, phase of coming back to normal, I guess. From what I understand, she ended up marrying a police officer, a detective, and I don't know if it's the person that helped her through the process. So,
no kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Had you ever met her?
No, not yet.
Okay. All right, give me another chapter in the museum.
So we have the Onion Field. That occurred in the early 60s.
And that's a tragic story for your department.
Yes.
Okay.
We learned a lot. I think the police departments in the entire world learned a lot from that.
And tell our listeners what that story is.
Yeah, so we had two officers that pulled over a vehicle in Hollywood area, and the two individuals had a long history, a criminal history. They surprised the officers. They kidnapped them, and they took him to Bakersfield, to Onion Field in Bakersfield. They executed one officer. As that was occurring, the second officer was able to run and get help, and then you know, we arrested them. So during that time period, some of the things we didn't do is after our shift, we never checked anybody in or out, so nobody really knew that they were gone. All that time period.
Oh, okay.
So now
as an officer comes into work and leaves the station, they've got to check in and out so you know where people are.
Yes. And the other thing we do is check on officers every hour. So when an officer goes to a radio call, the clock ticks, and then at the end of the hour, if they don't call in, then they'll ask for them. So those are the things that we've changed. So we know where the officers are, and if something occurs like that, and we've had... in my career, we've had a few instances where officers were missing, and then the entire city stops, and then we actually start doing a roll call, and then we start doing a dragnet looking for the officers.
And what year was this when this happened?
I want to say the mid-60s.
And that was made into a movie.
Yeah, Joseph Wambach wrote The Onion Field, which became a movie, and then he wrote several more.
He's a former officer?
Yes, he was retired as a lieutenant, and he worked along with Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek. He was also a police officer, and they worked for Chief Parker.
Gene Roddenberry was an officer?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
No, he was a writer. He wrote a lot of speeches for Parker. And
the chief?
Yes, and then when he... came up with a concept for Star Trek, Captain Kirk was the character of the chief.
You're kidding me.
Oh, that's...
Oh my gosh, I never knew.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. All right.
His wife is very active with us, and she comes and still supports the museum, and as well as Joseph Wambach. He's a very generous donator to the museum.
So life beyond law enforcement.
Yes.
Okay, so what else do we see at the museum?
Well, and then you have the North Hollywood shootout.
That is a haunting exhibit. Of course, I'm of the generation that lived through that, covering that on the news. Just a haunting exhibit to see what those two bank robbers were wearing.
Yes, so when you walk in there, you actually see their outfits. And not only that, but all of their weapons. And when you look at everything and all of the expended cases that we picked up, they're all on the floor next to them. So
for our listeners who don't fully know that story, let's paint that picture. What year was this again?
I think it was 1994.
Okay.
93-94.
So word is a bank is robbed by two men.
Yes.
High-powered weapons.
Yes.
The search is on to find these men.
Yeah, so they were they were doing, they did several bank robberies prior to this one. And they would go in on a Friday And at that time, the banks would receive about $800,000 for the Friday bankrolls and payrolls. So they would go in, and within 4 minutes, they would rob a particular bank and take off. This particular day, a couple of things occurred. The FBI put a notice out that these guys were active and doing this these robberies. So the bank at the time decided, well, what we'll do is we'll do half the delivery in the morning and the other half in the afternoon. So when they went into the bank this particular day expecting to get the full $800,000, that didn't occur. So they stayed there longer than they normally would because they thought that the money was in there somewhere and they were looking for it.
Oh, I see.
But as they were walking in, we had a patrol car driving by, and they looked over and they did a double take, and they said, "What?" And when you
because,
see them,
because yeah, they were like football players looking, yes, with all these shoulder, you know, armament and shoulder pads and
ski masks and everything.
Oh my goodness!
And they had taken their weapons and made them full auto. So they went in there and they spent an extra amount of time. Meanwhile, we were able to respond. And then as they came out, that's when the shooting occurred for quite a while.
Okay. And so we should note that the history of this is that they had these high-powered weapons and LAPD officers did not.
Correct.
So you were outgunned.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when I became a police officer, we had Ithaca shotgun. We had a .38 revolver, and that's it. So when this shooting occurred, we had just transitioned to a Beretta 9mm handgun. And a lot of officers still had the .38. Actually, I still carry mine on occasion. So the officers were shooting them, but they also had their bulletproof vests on. So the handguns weren't able to penetrate the vests. And also the shotguns, the range is only 27 yards max, and so it wasn't far enough to it wasn't reaching far enough to hit them. Their weapons, they were shooting officers, you know, blocks away, and then we actually have their vehicle and the first responding vehicle, police car. How anybody lived that was sitting in that car is unbelievable, but it's all shot up.
Yeah, I've seen that car before. So the shootout went on for how long?
I think the incident was a couple of hours. I mean, it was a long shootout. And then towards the end, the first suspect committed suicide, shot himself. The second one, he got into another gun battle. Although he got shot, it took a while to get to him, you know, because he was still active and he was still alive. So,
and if I have had this right, his mother sued then the department?
Yes. He ended up, he got shot in the leg and in one of the major arteries, so he bled out faster than we can get to him. So she felt that we should have got to him sooner. But at that time, we thought that there was another one or two accomplices, and there was a elementary school nearby, and we were clearing the school, making sure the kids were safe. So we were doing a lot of things, and we really weren't focused on him yet. And the fire department didn't want to go in until it was rendered completely safe for them.
Were any LAPD officers hit or wounded during this?
Yeah, several were.
They were?
Yes. One of them, Zaborban, he actually works at the police station with me. He got shot in the back several times.
Mm.
So nobody got killed. And then a few civilian people were shot in the out in the parking lot.
It was a bad day,
yes,
in L.A.
Very.
Yeah, definitely in history. I remember our station interviewed somebody who was there at the scene, an officer. He said he had a recurring nightmare of firing his gun and it melted like,
yes,
wax.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, at that time, I was doing a lot of television news shows, and a good friend of mine, Geraldo Rivera, actually called me. And while all this was going on, and I was working in Southwest by USC, and he says, "Bob, I cannot believe I'm watching this live, and what it would be to have a family member at home looking at this scene and watching their loved ones being shot on TV." He said, "This is unbelievable."
Mm-hmm.
So what he wanted to do, and we did an hour special on Channel 2, talking about the event, and then he pitched donating money to help the officers that and civilians that were shot during the incident. Mm. So that was something nice of him. But I never thought of that. This is the first time live you see this thing going on.
And how did the department change after that?
You know what? Every time we have these incidents, including the SLA shootout, you learn and you adapt and you grow. And each of these events, we learned a lot and we changed our tactics. Certainly the North Hollywood shootout, that opened the floodgate for us to start using assault weapons. At that time, we had to run to a store, B&B, and we borrowed their weapons, their assault weapons, to shoot back at these guys because we didn't have any.
Wow. Okay, so we are talking about the Los Angeles Police Museum and the Jack Webb Awards that are coming up, which helps to fundraise for the museum. The event is in Pasadena. It's on Friday, September 27th of 2019. And you have some honorees for that event. Want to talk about your honorees?
We have the Amasons, a great family.
Famous family?
Yes.
In Los Angeles?
Yes. Actually, the dad was the first honoree for the Jack Webb, believe it or not. And now his son is being honored and his wife. They also are very active with the police department. They are reserve officers, and they actually put on an event for the reserves called Twice a Citizen. And so we want to honor them and their contributions. I mean, it's those type of people that give back to the community, not only just in money, but in their time and their talents, and dedicate themselves as police officers, as reserve officers. So we want to highlight that and showcase their contributions.
I think that my connection with the Amundsen name is the big Amundsen Theater in downtown L.A., which is our premier venue for seeing theater here.
Yes.
The Amundsens are known for what else?
Well, the foundation. They sponsor a lot of charitable activities. The Peterson Museum, they own the Peterson Museum.
For cars?
Yes.
I think it's sports cars, but all kinds of cars.
Yes.
The car museum. Uh-huh.
So they're out there. They do a lot of things, and it's great. And we have Kenji. He is the number two surgeon out of USCMC.
Dr. Kenji Inaba?
Yes. Well, I'm sorry, Kenji.
Kenji to you. Okay.
He's a very prominent surgeon in Los Angeles, and his second life is a reserve officer. He puts on a uniform, and he's out there in the field in uniform in the Rampart area, and he also teaches our SWAT triage, and so he volunteers with that, and then actually physically is in the field as a police officer.
Okay.
And then the last is Steve Kasson. Steve Kasson is a local businessman out of Boyle Heights, very active in the community. He sponsors all kinds of youth activities throughout his entire life. He was also involved with the museum. And, you know, he's somebody that exemplifies what an Angeleno is, someone that gives back to the community. They have pride in what they have. And in their corner, in his little corner of Los Angeles, he's dedicated his life to make that a nice neighborhood. And by doing that, he sponsors a lot of the youth activities in the area. So.
Do you love this part of working with law enforcement, highlighting the positive?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's, we have some great officers out there and great stories out there, and it's just a matter of taking the time to highlight it. And this is a great event, and every year we find wonderful people like this, you know.
How do you personally wrestle with some of the tough issues that LAPD has faced? Rodney King, for example.
So, you know, everything is a learning point, and no one's perfect. But as a police department, you know, you need to grow. And to do that, you have to accept some of the, some of the issues that we face. If not, then you stay behind. You know, our department, like I said, started with the King of Spain. He established the city of Los Angeles, and it was in September of 1774, I believe, he wrote the rules and regulations of the police department. And in there, when he talked about law enforcement and how he wanted law enforcement to be conducted, when it came to Indians, and we're going to learn a little bit here on how we treat people that are different. He said he wants the officers to treat them, especially the women and children, with extra care and be more lenient. And why? He said so that they can understand, because there are different people, a different culture, a different color, a different language. And so we're trying to get them to assimilate into our values and our views. And so we don't want to be very harsh with them like we would maybe another Spanish citizen that knows better. So he said that they can understand it's not hatred or self-interest, but rather the fair dispensation of justice. That is our goal. That's what he wrote back before, while we were struggling to come up with our constitution. But that is the beginning of our law enforcement here in Los Angeles.
But certainly there are communities who, to this day, would feel that there are injustices toward their communities by law enforcement.
Correct. And if we used that phrase and we made the young officers, if they learned it, and that's why it's important to learn our history, and use that as a standard, we'd be a great police department, because he set the tone, you know. And we need to have that in our everyday police work. We need to recognize that there are people that are different cultures and customs. And a lot of them are afraid of us, because in other countries, they're very oppressive. So when they come here, they have that already in their minds. So it's up to us to recognize that and be empathetic, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else do you want us to know about the LAPD?
Well, other than it's the best department in the world, we have a great chief, Chief Moore, outstanding person that moved up the ranks. He started right before I did. And I've seen him grow, and his passion for not only the city but this department is prominent every single day that he works. And he's an outstanding example of what we as law enforcement officers should be.
So you're marking a 150th anniversary for the Los Angeles Police Department. What is that date?
Well, it's going to be. It's actually It's a little question there on the actual date, but it would be, the city started in 1850, July 1st. The police department evolved from that point on, so we didn't actually become a bona fide police department until 1869.
Is there going to be a big ceremony?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're going to shut the street down. I think it's going to be December 5th now. If you are in the city of Los Angeles, got nothing to do, come on up. We're going to have a lot of different activities. We're going to have the mayor there and the entire city council. So it's going to be a big big event for the city.
In front of LAPD headquarters?
No, it's in front of the police museum.
Ah, okay. Okay. And that is where?
That's in Highland Park. So York and Figueroa would be the major cross street, so 6445 York Boulevard.
Is the museum open to the public?
Yes.
And what's the cost to get in?
$10.
So basically, if you're listening to this podcast and you're in Los Angeles and you want to see the Los Angeles Police Museum, you just call, come down, buy a ticket, come in?
Yes, and we have self-guided tours. On certain days, we have our volunteers that provide tours. And some of these volunteers were involved in the SLA shootout or the Black Panther shootout. So mm-hmm. ask them, and you can get a little bit more than just the regular tour. So mm-hmm. It's exciting.
You certainly seem very proud of your job and your department.
Yes, 100%. Like anything else, we grow, and I think that looking back at our department after 38 years, I'm at the twilight of my history of my career, and I'm very proud of where we're at, and I'm very happy with the new generation of officers, and I think that they're going to continue the excellence that we've set in the past.
All right. Unless I've missed something, is there anything else you want to add?
Come on out to the Police Museum. Please support it. We're going to be doing a lot of different events. You can check us out on our website for the dates and times. Now, I must say this. Please check the website before you go down there because we do have a lot of filming, and they will rent out the place for the entire day. So we post those dates when we are closed for filming.
All right. So my guest has been Sergeant Bob Alaniz of the Los Angeles Police Department, Northeast Station, and also on the board of directors of the Los Angeles Police Museum and apparently a few other boards. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate the insight and perspective.
Thank you. Thank you very much.